This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Brian Fernandez and Khoo Soo Chuang. And time to look at some of the biggest stories in the business now. We start with a report that coming out of Media Prima. It's a second quarter results. The straight second quarterly loss for it. It's some 133 million ringgit. They say that this is due to a one-off impairment of some 142 million ringgit invested in Malaysian newsprint industries.
Yeah, so Media Prima, as is all media companies around the world, are really going through this restructuring process. And one of the key things is this kitchen sinking exercise with Malaysian newsprint industries is really shutting down the Malaysia's oldest newsprint producer. It has been losing money for the last 3 years. They decided on August 1st to shut the business down. And really what this is all about is it's a broader trend of declining newspaper advertising, newspaper print. Young people are just not reading newspapers. To give you an idea, just in terms of numbers, how dramatic the fall has been. So in terms of advertising numbers in 2015, print advertising constituted about 4.3 billion ringgit, or 28% of total advertising expenditure. 2017 now, on an annualized basis, the first half of the year figures are up, so we annualize the figures, 2.8 billion. So it's almost a 1.5 billion fall, and it's now only 18% of advertising expenditure. So it's a very, very significant drop, symptomatic of just an overall industry trend moving away from print into digital platforms.
What do you think? It's a sign of the times, isn't it? And this is basically, we don't even know the quantum of discount. This could be reported rate charges, you know what I mean? So
these are direct rate charges.
It could be worse than that.
But, you know, the story of the demise of the traditional media, the rise of digital media and all that has been on everybody's lips for at least now half a decade, maybe more, maybe even a decade, right? And it hasn't quite happened as dramatically as you think, especially with the passions and emotions invested in the discussion.
But, Sharad, I think these numbers really show that acceleration. I think it was a gradual,
it's gathering steam now.
Gathering steam.
The US and Europe are at the forefront. They're at the cusp of, they are the wave makers. And then the rest of the world kind of catches up because we're in a time warp, right? But you can see the last 3 years has really been gathering steam. And as a percentage of total ADEX in Malaysia has not even grown. It's been kind of like flat for the last few years, low single digit growth rates. So, and the other thing is, which is not adequately measured, is the digital ADEX. I think unofficially it's somewhere around 15-16%. Could be much more than that.
So the question is, the ADEX for digital hasn't flipped over. It hasn't become. The lion's share of what's
and
out
it's so
there.
Fragmented, so dominated by the foreign players. You don't really know for sure.
The Googles and the Facebooks.
Googles and the Facebooks, yeah.
And they are taking a larger and larger portion of the total advertising dollars.
Yeah, yeah.
And I take your point, Chuang, about really in terms of measurement. If you look at, for example, an internet startup today, a lot of times their growth and their spend is almost entirely digital. And it's a large proportion of their overall.
Well, do you remember TBWA, who just spoke to last week? TBWA.
Yes, you had him on the grill.
Yeah. So he's seen a change in theme because traditionally, as recently as maybe 5-10 years ago, the big advertisers around the world were the multinationals, the Johnson Johnsons, the Nestle's, the British American Tobacco's. Today, the biggest advertisers are the digital guys, the 21st century businesses, the Facebooks, the Amazons, the Googles, the Netflixes, the Alibabas. They are the ones who are spending the ad dollar. They're spending as vigorously, if not more vigorously, than ever before.
Okay, just coming back to the story of Media Prima, though. So, especially with their argument that this loss is due to a one-off impairment, is this not then a sign of the times? It's not necessarily a barometer of the industry or the sector itself.
But it is, because what they're doing, and I tend to agree that all media companies around the world are grappling with trying to find new sources of revenue. What Media Prima have done is really, they're going on a diversification strategy. They're acquiring new businesses. They acquired Rev Asia, for example, in May 2017 for $105 million. That's purely a digital, various digital platforms. They've also gone into a home shopping venture with a Korean company, so CJ Wow Shop. They've also gone into content distribution. And again, back to digital business. Now, we may say these are very small portions of their overall business, but they are retooling. They are really finding the new growth avenues. And what surprised me about one of their deals that they did, which is to provide 25,000 hours of Malay programming to Singtel. Now, that's a very interesting thing. These are early days yet. Yeah, but then it gives them some growth avenues correct. Moving forward.
Which is okay if you're a small startup and you're pivoting quickly. But when you've got group revenues in the billions of ringgit, you want to move the needle for shareholders and you can't because it's, you know, when your free-to-air TVs and your print segment is so big, you really have to make a big splash. And there are parallels to be drawn with aviation as well, right? For example, we've just seen how Singapore Airlines have just had this massive loss. But they couldn't play the low-cost game. Even though they tried, and the resources of Singapore Airlines to play the low-cost game, they can't make it because culturally, from an organic standpoint, unless you're set up to be a low-cost player, you can't make it in low-cost.
Yeah, but your cost structure then can be retooled. In this case, Media Prima, for example.
But to some limited success, because look at Singapore Airlines quantities. So for Media Prima to want to go and buy Says.com and all the other digital assets from the Rev fold, great, you can buy it for 105 million ringgit, but can you work? Are your management team and is your company ethos set up for digital space? I don't know. Jury's out. I'm not saying you're going to fail.
Yeah, jury's out.
Jury's out.
But you see, that's at least what they're trying to do. They're trying to retool for the business forward. If you look at Utusan, for example.
Compare and contrast.
Yeah.
Discuss. Because what Utusan is saying, they're not playing the media because they know they don't have the brand. So what they're doing is they're going to e-learning. Not bad. I give them credit. It's not a bad idea. And the other thing, recognizing
their limitations.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and at least you call a spade because at the end of the day, you know what I mean? You can't do a Financial Times, you can't do a New York Times and charge or pay, you know, a fee for your content.
Also in the news today, we look at the cover of the Edge Financial Daily. They report the average debt repayment trend has risen to 70 days in the second quarter of this year. This is according to RAM Credit Information.
So basically, and this is symptomatic of what we hear on the ground and then the fact that it's harder and harder to collect money. So it's gone up from the previous quarter, which is already quite a lot, 66 days, to 70 days. Now, it talks about different industries, for example, the construction, retail, and wholesale industries, the receivables are anywhere from 60 days to 120 days. So that 77 days figures is an average.
What would be a good number when it comes
One month would be nice, two months on the outside, but things, you know, at the end of the day, you've got GST, and GST applies across the board to corporations and individuals. Corporations have got to pay GST within a quarter or 3 months of their invoicing every three months. If this on the basis of this 70 days is the national average, that's 2 months and 10 days in construction, as this story points out, it could be as long as much more than that, 3-4 months. You have got to front the GST payments on behalf of your customers, even if you don't get paid by your customers.
Okay? And that impacts your cash flow because
absolutely
it's 6%. Now, a lot of businesses don't operate on very high margins, especially with the competitive space today. So 6% is a huge dent on their cash flow.
And if you don't pay your GST within the stipulated timeline, you get fined 5% within the next 30 days, an additional 3% for every subsequent 30 days. So and subject to a maximum of 25%. So a lot of businesses with very, very low margins, and construction, for example, is very, very low margin. According to the story from The Edge, it could take as long as 4 months on average to get paid for your business. So, you know, you don't have a lot of headroom to play on.
Okay, what about the best practices internationally about GST? I mean, is this typical of the model for GST payment? It goes to government first before. And we've had more than a year now of GST. I mean, surely the adjustments would have been made by now.
The irony here is that both individuals and corporations, we have had to stump up and basically give up a lot. To suffer because the government and the country is in debt, essentially, right? Which is fair. But at the end of the day, if we paid fair value for the construction and infrastructure projects that we're doing, the country wouldn't be this much trouble. So only a few small people who are the kind of like the cozy few who are living off the largesse of these infrastructure projects. If every single dollar that we paid towards the infrastructure project, every dollar went into that project, we wouldn't be in so much debt.
Okay, you got my vote. Which constituency are you standing for? Okay, moving on.
Bandar Utama.
Well, yesterday, President Donald Trump signed a directive to explore the prospect of sanctioning Beijing for what they claim are unfair acquisitions of American high technology. This would be the first direct action by the White House against China after so much bluster, including threats of calling China a rogue currency trader, right? So well, where do we go from this? I mean, how much? And Joe, you asked Joe Quinlan this question as well, didn't you, Chuang?
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, what Americans are trying to do here and what the rest of the world trying to do is basically telling China, if you want your cake, you must be able to eat it as well. So if you want to do business with the rest of the world, you have to play by global, you know, business rules, which is to, you know, offer proper intellectual property protection, play by WTO rules, etc. But China doesn't want to play ball. And China maybe, in a way, can afford to do that because they are the big dogs in the room with the big fat wallets. And look at the reserves. They've just gone past $3 trillion again, having added $30 billion in just 1 month alone.
But you see, one of the things is the sheer size of the what the White House claims to be global intellectual property theft of costs U.S. businesses $600 billion
a year. But this is the White House position, right? I mean, yes. Theft is an emotive word. Is it descriptive or is it just ideologically laden? I mean, well, do they have facts to back this up?
Well, let's look at an old case in 2005, a joint venture between Siemens and the China National Railway Corporation. This was the first high-speed train venture in China. And what happened was originally 3 trains were produced in Germany, another 56 were supposed to be done in China, and a follow-on order was supposed to be made to Siemens. After the initial order, the order actually went to the Chinese company, and Siemens just supplied some components. So literally they reverse engineered Siemens products.
Okay, this is a story we're going to have to keep coming back to. But we're running out of time. We're coming up to the news, and after that we'll have the opening numbers of the stock market and more analysis. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.